I wanted to go to G7 because it looks like world leaders are trying to put pressure on Netanyahu to stop the attacks. It is unclear exactly where Trump stands, who's with them in Calgary, in Canada, since he has expressed both sides on this. Talk about this, what the U.S. needs to do right now, who clearly everyone acknowledges has the only lever of power that can be exerted over Netanyahu.
That's correct. President Trump is the only world leader who can stop the cycle of escalation from expanding into a much more disastrous regional conflagration, with direct costs for the United States and him as president. Because if he gets engaged, if there are American fatalities and casualties, if the price of energy markets, global energy markets, increase in the next few days, all of it would backfire on him politically, and especially with his MAGA base that is deeply opposed to any additional U.S. military entanglements in that part of the world, especially if it's aimed at regime change. Now, the way he needs to tackle this is to first, he needs to create distance with Israel, because there is no way that the Iranians would go back to the negotiating table and take him seriously if they are seen as him playing a double game here. And the only way he can do that is to use the leverage that you mentioned, which is the provision of offensive weapons to Israel. I think he can still stand next to Israel in defense of Israel, but he has to threaten that if Netanyahu continues this war, which endangers the 40,000 American troops in the Persian Gulf region and hundreds of thousands of Americans who live in Israel, that he would pull the plug on Netanyahu's ability to further escalate this conflict. And then he needs to turn to the Iranians and do two things. One is to also threaten the Iranians that if they keep fighting, the U.S. would get involved. That is exactly what ended the Iran-Iraq War in 1988. The U.S. intervened in that conflict, and that was a huge part of Iranian calculus to agree to a ceasefire. And he also has to simultaneously put an offer on the table, a nuclear deal that is reasonable, that is not one-sided, that includes generous sanctions relief, so that the Iranians, with all the mistrust, start seeing in him as somebody who's really more interested in deal-making rather than double-dealing here.
Thank you very much, Ali Vaez. Before we go, Orly Noy, we have just about a minute. As you said, you have a very unique perspective as an Israeli, Iranian-born, Iranian-raised woman, journalist, peace activist in Israel. Your final thoughts as the attacks go back and forth on this fourth day?
I think in a very short sentence, both countries' people are hostages in the hands of very corrupted, very dangerous governments. Both societies need to get rid of their prospective governments, but a war is not the way. And if anybody fantasizes that through violence, any political change that is sustainable towards more democracy, more freedom, will occur in any of the countries, he's sadly, sadly mistaken.
Orly Noy, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Iranian-Israeli activist, editor of Local Call, Hebrew language media, and chair of the human rights group B'Tselem's executive board, speaking to us from Jerusalem. And Ali Vaez, International Crisis Group, Iran project director, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. Next up, voices from the streets as millions upon millions of people in the United States join No King's Day protests. Stay with us.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
Voy entrando aquí a mi pueblo.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
Y me reciben llorando.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
Yo no sé lo que tú tienes.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
Y me sigo preguntando.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
árbol me lo están tumbando.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
Detrás de la cola el pasto.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
Ay, mi árbol me lo están tumbando.
¿Qué será lo que está pasando?
Hey. Yemaya by Maku Sound System in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. At least 5 million people joined No King's Day protests Saturday in the largest day of action against President Trump since his return to office. Protests were held in more than 2,100 cities and towns across the country. In Los Angeles, 200,000 people marched just days after Trump deployed the National Guard and Marines to the city. Protesters in L.A. included former Marine Melvin Hill.
I'm out here because I was willing to die for the things we have in our Constitution. And right now, I think our constitutional rights are being violated, stepped on, trampled on, and disregarded by a president, commander-in-chief, which would be Donald Trump. I mean, everything looks unlawful to me at this point in America.
In Philadelphia, over 100,000 people took to the streets. Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin of Maryland addressed the crowd.
Yes, Donald, the Declaration and the Constitution were written by people who wanted to stop criminal bosses like you from taking state power.
Major No King's Day protests were also held here in New York, in San Diego, Chicago, Seattle, and other communities large and small. In Lyons, Colorado, a town of just 2,100 in the foothills of the Rocky Mountain National Park, hundreds joined the protests. This is Larry Quinn, an Army veteran and longtime Lyons resident.
I'm Larry Quinn, and I'm in Lyons, Colorado, population 2,100. And I'm here because my dad drove trains across France to defeat the Nazis. And then I served honorably, also in the Army, and I'm disgusted about the fascist regime we have.
The size of the No King's Day protests dwarfed the turnout for a military parade Saturday in Washington, D.C., held on President Trump's 79th birthday and the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army. The parade reportedly cost as much as $100 million. Democracy Now! Spoke to some of the protesters in the nation's capital.
My name is Brett Hines. I live here in Washington, D.C., and I'm here because I think that this is a waste of resources when we have hungry children and when we have people going to sleep without a roof over their heads.
And what does your sign say?
The sign says they got money for wars, but they can't feed the poor. It's a good line from Tupac.
I'm Amy. My sign says, no kings. I think that's the side. Yeah. The other side says the emperor has no clothes from the children's fairy tale or fable. I'm here because the president said that any protest would be met with hard force. I wasn't planning on coming, but that's un-American, anti-constitutional, and so I had to come. I was called to come. I also think this is an enormous waste of taxpayer dollars. As someone who got doged and lost my livelihood and my life's work, to have him turn around and spend $50 million on this, I think that's outrageous.
What type of work were you doing?
Bringing clean water to poor people.
And what's happened to that program, as far as you know?
It's gone.
My name is Aubrey Lowe. I was a captain in the Army for 8 years, so I'm a veteran. I deployed to Afghanistan once. I'm from El Paso, Texas, originally. I was a little nervous coming out today because I heard that peaceful protests might be met with a big force, in somebody's words. And so I let my folks know where I was going. I let friends know, and I'm glad that I've been able to be here without being heavily harassed. So that gave me some hope.
Army Captain Aubrey Lowe, among those protesting Trump's parade in Washington, speaking to Democracy Now!'s Dennis Moynihan. For much of Saturday, news networks showed split screens of Trump's poorly attended military parade alongside footage of the massive No Kings protests. Here in New York, organizers say as many as 200,000 people gathered at Bryant Park before moving down Fifth Avenue to Madison Square Park. Democracy Now! Was there.
This is what democracy looks like.
Hi, my name is Jay Sean Sadler. He, him. And I am a father, I'm a guidance counselor, I'm a community member and world citizen, and I'm here now because I want to make sure that we preserve our democracy. I want to make sure that all people in this country are safe, regardless of if they're an immigrant, regardless of if they are straight or if they're gay or whatever they are. Like, everyone deserves to be free and safe.
Can you say what your sweatshirt says?
Yes. It says woke, not the insult that you think it is.
And who are you? And how old are you?
My name is Rue. I'm 15 years old, and I use any pronouns. I'm here because I've seen firsthand how much destruction Trump's impact has caused on especially queer and trans youth. I've been in and out of a lot of places like that, and I've seen like how hard people have taken it. It's really hard to be a child in a society where you feel like people don't want you to exist. So I'm out here for people who can't be out here. I'm very lucky to have a supportive father, but I know not everyone does. So I'm out here to give a voice to the people who don't have one and to show that we're still here, we're still out here, we're still going to be fighting.
The fact that there are thousands and thousands of people out here today, what difference does that make to you?
It honestly makes me so happy. After the election, I was really worried because I felt like the adults had kind of failed me. Since I couldn't vote, I was really like, you guys had all of the power. You guys could have stopped this, but people didn't. And I was so worried. I didn't even leave my house for a couple of weeks. But now it's just great that there's so many people here and that I'm not alone, you know?
Can you describe your flag to our radio audience in addition
yes,
to our TV audience
yes,
and hold it up?
So this is the inclusive pride flag. It has the regular rainbow stripes as well as black and brown for people of color in the queer community. Also has the trans colors and the intersex flag to support those people as well.
It's Pride Month. What do you have to say to President Trump on his 79th birthday today?
We're not scared of you, and I hope you have an awful birthday.
I am Dr. William D. Carter III. I am the senior pastor at the Franklin St. John's United Methodist Church, which is in Newark, New Jersey. And I came because I do not believe people's rights should be taken away, no matter their immigration status, no matter their orientation. People should have rights. And there should not be a king. We elected a president, not a king. So that's why I'm here today for this cause.
What does the sign say that you're holding?
It says prejudice, cowardice, accomplice.
And describe the flag to me.
Yes. This is an American flag. Even as a Christian, I believe in the right of all people, no matter their religious perspective, or even if they don't have a religious perspective, they ought to have rights. And that is the United States of America. United. We are united as one.
Your thoughts on your mayor, the mayor of Newark, Roz
yes.
Baraka,
yes.
being arrested as he attempted to, what he said was do his duty to enforce oversight of an ICE jail with three Congress members.
Yeah. I love Mayor Roz Baraka. I think that he is doing a exceptional job, and I think him being arrested demonstrates his passion for the cause and just making sure that all people have rights.
My name is George. I'm 15 years old, and I'm out here because I'm scared of the future.
Tell me about the flags you're carrying.
I mean, I'm carrying the American flag and the trans flag because I think those two represent me. And because I think it's important to carry the flags that that I feel proud of.
It's raining. You think it's worth it to be out here?
100%. I would be out here in a storm. I would be out here if it was pouring. I'm just happy it's raining on Trump's parade.
My name's Lucy. I'm 16. And I'm out here because I want a future. I am carrying a sign that says no kings because I believe that in America, we are a democracy. We do not have kings. This is not right, and it needs to stop.
My name's Lily Buongiorno. I'm carrying an American flag. I'm here because I am in complete disgust by the injustice of Trump, especially towards immigrants and towards people's like rights. And I think that we should protest that every single day that he is still in office.
How old are you?
I'm 15.
How old are you? What's your name? And tell me about your sign.
I'm also 15. My name's Astrid Lemons. And my sign says, defend the Constitution, not the crown, because I believe what we should be doing is fighting for democracy and fighting for the future of us, the students, the young people who are going to live in our future. And we want this
Westminster to be a place where everybody can say what they want and nobody's attacked for that.
My name is Georgia Revely. I am 15 years old. I'm here to protest the Trump administration's treatment of not only immigrants but also women and students and basically almost everyone in the country. And I think it's really important that we have so many people here and all over the country and all over the world to show the Trump administration that we're not going to let this slide and that we as people can protest and that we can do it in a way where we can get our point heard. And I think it's important that young people are out here too. We're with We the Students New York, which gathers a bunch of students from all over New York City and does protests. We've done one before, a walkout in Washington Square Park.
And so, can you describe your double necklace to me?
I'm Jewish, so it's a Jewish star, so I think it's important to, you know, people of all religions and all ethnicities should all be out here protesting the treatment of immigrants here, protesting the treatment of Palestinians in Gaza. I just think it's really important that we all be out here getting our word across.
My name is Caroline Gilman. I'm 15 years old, and I'm holding a sign that says, abort the abort the presidency in the second term, and I'm here to fight for my future and all my friends' futures and the future generations of all the kids that are younger than us and every generation that came before us and fought for what we're fighting for now.
My name is Kimberly. I'm 27. I'm here because it's important to show up for these kind of things, show up for community. Community is so important, and anything I can do, like you guys, we should all just do, you know.
And tell me about your flag.
Oh, this is my Ecuadorian flag. My parents are both Ecuadorian. I'm very proud to be Ecuadorian. So I'm here for the Latino community, for everybody who's, like, going through some right now, because it's... the country is in a crazy start right now.
My name is Glenn Consab, and I'm the founder of Spirit. We are working in support of the End Super PACs campaign. As we know, the billionaires fund the elections, right? Like, what this image is implicitly saying is that if you have $200 million, you could just buy it. You and I, maximum contributions we can give is $5,400. It's insane that corporations can give whatever they want. And so, there was a ballot initiative in Maine last November that made super PACs illegal. 73% of Mainers voted for it. And so their goal is to get it to the Supreme Court. What we do is we use augmented reality art and education to help people envision a world without the billionaires at the center, right? So, like, we're in New York. Everyone knows that public housing or housing in general is way too expensive. So what we're doing is, number one, we're showing a dystopic image as far as where things are going. We have a protopic image of, like, let's say Rebney and the real estate lobbies out the way. This could be the future of public housing right here. Community gardens, vertical farms, solar panels up top.
And what about this picture in the middle?
So this is Elon. I honestly don't think they're beefing because they didn't come. I don't think that Elon and Trump broke up because they still have the SpaceX contracts, like, show me the money. But basically, yeah, the man has $200 million, made $200 billion over the election, highest ROI ever. And he's pretty much running the show.
With a crown on his head.
Yeah, pretty much. So our goal is to do public teach-ins and demonstrations with this art, help people imagine a world without the billionaires, have people sign our petition. And then once we get the process templatized, we want to give other people materials to go to their neighborhoods and do the same.
Some of the protesters here in New York City, where an estimated 200,000 people marched as part of the more than 2,100 nationwide No Kings Day protests that took place over the weekend. Estimates of upwards of 5 million people protested across the country, the single largest day of protest of President Trump's second term. Special thanks to Laura Bustillos. Coming up, we go to Minneapolis, where a former Minnesota House Speaker was gunned down with her husband, another state senator, and his wife shot multiple times. Stay with us.
You're gonna reach just what you said.
Home on the Mountains, rendition of Natalie Coleman and Nora Brown here in our Democracy Now! Studio. They recently performed at the Kennedy Center, an unfurled banner protesting President Trump's takeover of the Cultural Arts Center. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. After the biggest manhunt in Minnesota history, authorities have detained a 57-year-old man accused of assassinating former Minnesota Democratic House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband in their home early Saturday. The suspect, Vance Belter, is also accused of shooting and wounding State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette at their home. Authorities say Belter carried out the shootings while disguised as a police officer. Security footage shows Belter wearing a mask and a police vest and a badge as he approached Hoffman's front door in Champlin with a flashlight and a gun. Authorities say they were alerted to the attacks by a 911 call made after the initial attack on Hoffman and his wife by their daughter, Hope, who is at home with her parents. Hoffman was shot 9 times, his wife, Yvette, 8 times. She reportedly threw herself on in front of her daughter, Hope, to shield her. Hope was not shot. After police learned the shooting victim was a state legislator, they said they sent officers to the nearby home of Senator Hartman in Brooklyn Park. And when they arrived around 3:35 a.m., they found the suspect's SUV in the driveway. The Minnesota Star Tribune reports, quote, an officer watched as Belter shot Mark Hartman through the front door. And after an exchange of gunfire, Belter retreated inside the house and escaped. Police say they then found Melissa and Mark Hartman shot dead inside their home. In Belter's car, police found 3 AK-47 assault rifles, a 9mm handgun, a hit list written by the gunman that contained the names of about 70 people, including prominent Democratic lawmakers and abortion providers and advocates, naming Planned Parenthood. Flyers for Saturday's No Kings rallies were also found. This prompted many organizers in Minnesota to cancel their protests. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz spoke Sunday night, denounced political violence.
A moment in this country where we watched violence erupt. This cannot be the norm. It cannot be the way that we deal with our political differences. Now's the time for us to recommit to the core values of this country.
Governor Walz has also paid tribute to Melissa Hartman, who served as House Speaker in Minnesota from 2019 till earlier this year. Her legislative victories, including codifying the right to abortion in Minnesota's constitution and providing free school lunches to children. The alleged gunman, Vance Belter, is reportedly a conservative evangelical Christian who's posted on social media that he's strongly against abortion and LGBTQ rights. For more, we're joined in Minneapolis by Patricia Torres-Rey, who is a former Minnesota state senator who worked closely with Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hartman and State Senator John Hoffman. Our deepest condolences to you and your community. Can you talk about who the House Speaker was and what this means in your state and for this country?
Melissa Hartman was an outstanding leader that was very loved and respected by many people. And what this means for us is that we lost a leader that was very important to us, not only to our communities as a human being and as a leader who did impactful work, but also obviously as a mother, as a friend. And we are not only shocked, but incredibly saddened. Melissa Hartman has been defined as the most consequential leader of the House in Minnesota history. And I agree with that statement. I think she has been the most consequential leader in our community. So we are profoundly sad and shocked, really, with the circumstances. It's so hard to us.
Your whole community has been terrorized for 2 days because the alleged assassin wasn't caught for 43 hours. Can you tell us more about who the former House Speaker, Melissa Hartman, about her legacy? We just said that she had pushed to codify abortion in the Minnesota Constitution, fought for free school lunches for children in need. Can you tell us more?
Yes, I have a long list of her accomplishments as a leader, and I could go on, you know, to name a few of them, but I also want to talk a little bit about her leadership style, because I believe that that is really the most important thing that we need to review, especially in these times when it is difficult to galvanize a group of leaders that is as diverse as the House DFL caucus is. Melissa Horman led a caucus of members that is the most diverse that we've ever had in the state of Minnesota. 32 people of color and indigenous people serve in that caucus, and we have very active, outstanding transgender members. So what Melissa Horman was able to do in Minnesota is really galvanize her caucus and really appoint these leaders to serve in a collaborative, collective manner. And what we saw and what I saw as a Latina woman was for the first time in the state of Minnesota, people of color in positions of power working with a leader to solve significant problems. And it was that coalition that really allowed her to move significant policy that we have not been able to do in a progressive state as the state of Minnesota, where we have the largest disparities in the country. So they were able to move, you know, child tax credits. She was very proud to move family and medical paid leave in Minnesota. We have the strongest protections for transgender people in the state of Minnesota. We legalize recreational marijuana. We pass driver's licenses for all people, regardless of their legal status. We did the largest increase for public education. We have free college for people who make under $80,000 in Minnesota. And I can go on. The list is just incredibly long.
Let me bring people, Minnesota former state House Speaker Melissa Horman, in her own words, interviewed by CBS News Minnesota reporter Esme Murphy. In this clip, Hortman's discussing that new paid family leave program and paid sick leave mandate recently passed by the legislature.
Well, a lot of white collar workers have this benefit, or highly compensated people already have this benefit. Most workers in the state don't have the ability to take paid time off when somebody in their family has cancer and needs to be taken care of. A lot of Minnesotans, when a member of their family is sick right now, they have to choose between staying at home and taking care of their loved one and not being able to pay their mortgage, or going to work and having their loved one not get the care that they need. But January 1st next year, that all changes.
That's the former House Speaker, Melissa Horman, earlier this year. So painful to see her hear her voice. And it was Hope, the daughter of the Hoffmans, who were shot multiple times, her mother that protected her, who saved so many by calling 911. You knew Hope. Can you talk about her significance in what she did in these last 20 seconds?
I am not surprised at all that Hope will have the courage in that moment to make that call and do what she had to do. She is the only daughter of a loving couple that just adore her. And she has been working in multiple issues on behalf of people with disabilities, just like her father.
I'm going to have I thank you so much for your participation in today's show. Patricia Torres-Ray, former Minnesota senator, worked closely with Minnesota former House Speaker Melissa Horman and State Senator John Hoffman. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.